Welcome to Steve's Rules, a periodic podcast featuring Steve Nelson, Executive Principal at McCormick Group in the Law and Government Affairs Practice. My name is Marie Coffey, and I'm the principal of M. Coffey, a law firm marketing and business development boutique. For more information, please visit my website at mcoffey.net. Steve has been an executive recruiter for nearly three decades, and without naming names, he is ready to spill the tea on best practices and maybe a few not so best practices by firms and candidates that he has seen during his career recruiting some of the most driven and successful professionals into highly profitable and growing firms. Steve is a former lawyer and journalist and is a fellow of the College of Law Practice Management and a proud son of Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Full transparency here, Steve has helped my career immensely through the years and has become something of a career shaman to me, and I know many others. Well, hello, everybody, to another edition of Steve's Rules. And this is a very special edition, right, Steve?
Absolutely. Year-end special.
Yes, it's a year-end special. We will not have any elves or Santas running around on this one. And no singing, Steve, this time. But we're joined by a couple of great colleagues of Steve's from McCormick Group, the McCormick Group, and we've got an action-packed presentation for you all today, episode for you today. We're gonna talk about market, what was, what will be, talk about different observations on how firms can improve their batting average, if you will, with recruits and how to support those recruits a little bit, and a very special bit at the right at the end where we talk about give a short punchy list of some ideas for you all to consider. So with that, why don't we go ahead and kick it off with some brief introductions, and we'll start with Sadia.
Thank you, Murray, so much. And Steve, congratulations on a successful year with the podcast. I'm Sadia Sultan. I'm based in Houston. I'm looking at and exploring the opportunities for the McCormick Group in the Houston and then sort of greater Texas market. I've had a career of over 20 years in public and government affairs, with a focus mostly on energy. And then I've been doing legal recruiting for 2 to 3 years as well. And I work with my colleagues, Rob and Steve, and we cover our respective markets. We've taken the McCormick Group a little bit outside of DC into Texas and New York. Thank you, Murray, and I look forward to participating.
Yeah, great. Rob?
Thank you, Murray. And thank you, Steve, for inviting us. My name is Rob Verga. I joined McCormick in April of 22 after a long career in legal services. First, I was a structured finance attorney. Then I worked as a compliance manager. And then finally, as a conflicts attorney at two big law firms. And I enjoy what I do. I love recruiting because I get to help people and I get to solve problems. I get to put candidates in a better place, maybe get some more of what they deserve in terms of compensation, et cetera. And I get to help law firms fill a need, build a business. So I love what I do and looking forward to the year ahead.
Absolutely. And while you're a man who needs no introduction, especially on this podcast, Steve, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself once again.
Okay. So I'm Steve Nelson. I've been with the McCormick Group now 28 years and counting. And basically run the gamut and everything in the legal space. Worked on partners, groups, government lawyers, people from the Hill. But then also work on the high level professional management searches as well. So it's it's been a varied career, and I'm very happy to be doing this podcast with you, Murray.
Well, and I with you, Steve. We've had a long relationship and a fruitful one. So thank you. And I will tell the listeners that if you want to understand what's going on in your respective markets, give Sadia a call, give Rob a call, give Steve a call. These folks have the fingers on the pulse, like no other group that I've that I've seen, and I've seen a lot of groups. So, and I really mean that. And if you aren't on their mailing list for their respective intelligence reports that they send out, please look for the email address in the show notes, and you please sign up. Just send them a note, let them know you want to be on their mailing list. All right. So with that, and I'll introduce myself. I'm Murray Coffey. I'm the principal and founder of M Coffey. We're a law firm consultancy working in all kinds of different areas related to marketing, business development, professional development, business planning, et cetera. And former CMO for, I don't know, what, Steve, 20 plus years. I've always been involved in recruiting. So that was kind of a natural match here. So why don't we talk about what's happened in our markets, your respective markets, what you're seeing as maybe emerging trends in the markets that you're in. And I know, Steve, you'll kind of talk maybe about some of the national trends as well. But this time, let's kick off with Sadia talking about the markets that she's focusing in, what she's seeing, what's going on, and what's sort of on the horizon.
Thank you, Murray, so much. Steve will talk about the national trends, and the national trends will, of course, have an impact on our respective markets. In Texas, I think he would agree that you see the same sort of you have lateral hiring sort of down as compared to the same time last year and same time in 2021. And, you know, some of this is driven by the corporate practice slowdown and a little bit of slowdown on the regulatory practice fronts. Now, Texas specifically, I would say, so we have Washington, D.C., obviously, where the McCormick Group is headquartered. Once you get out of D.C., you know, you're looking, the states are like industrial hub states. That's what I consider them. So in Texas, you know, with the focus on energy, healthcare, you know, other spaces, you're going to see that both companies moving into Texas, whether they're coming from California or they're coming from overseas, you're going to see that company movement drive the demand for, you know, opening of new offices for the law firms. You're going to see more hiring in that regard. You're also, because it's an industrial hub state, you're going to see the same trends you see in those industries. You know, for example, energy moving from oil and gas to renewables. You're going to see the demand shift as well for hiring, you know, maybe less oil and gas lawyers, more renewable lawyers, more, you know, energy storage lawyers, for example. So that's what you get at that state level. And in Texas, you're going to see those trends around energy and healthcare. Texas on its own, if it was its own standalone economy, would be, depending on the oil price, anywhere from 10th to 14th. So even in a slow year, you're going to see growth in Texas. And that's why you see so many offices, including so many law firms, including not the world's largest law firms, opening offices in Austin, Dallas, Houston. Thank you, Murray.
And just a quick question, Sadia. I am in the Texas markets, and I'm in Dallas specifically. We saw what I would call sort of a disruption of the big five firms in Texas. A lot of new firms coming in, competition. It made things frothy for a while. Is that settling out a little bit, or is that still going on?
We have followed the trends for the last 2 years. I would invite Steve to tell me if he saw any other trends beyond the 2 years. But Murray, I think generally speaking, you're just seeing increased competition. I hope I'm answering your question the way you're looking at it. But you're seeing like smaller firms opening offices in areas where maybe bigger firms were dominating. You're also seeing the Texas firms open more offices outside of Texas.
Yes.
So you see that kind of movement in different ways. We're actually talking to a firm right now that had a significant energy presence in New York and California, and is now trying to add personnel to the Texas side, but on the energy transition side.
Transition, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I think the transition side is going to pick up speed over time. Yeah. Don't tell.
Yeah, Murray, let me add just a couple of points to what Saadi is saying, because these are a couple of things we've noticed. One is, I think that there was a craze, I would say, in that 5-year period where the big national firms, and you all know who they are, were coming in overpaying for talent and just grabbing people from mostly the established Texas firms, but others. That has slowed down. There's still some of that going on, but that's slowed down. The other thing we're seeing is, and Saadi referred to this, I think there are a lot of smaller firms, Am Law, sort of second 100 firms, and even smaller than that, that are really increasing their efforts in Texas, and particularly with lower rate practices. The one of the national trends we're seeing is the bifurcation is even more distinct now between firms that are that partners routinely charge well over $1,000 an hour, and firms that are charged that are happy to charge as low as $600 an hour for partner time. And so I think that that's created their own hubs of activity. And the other thing that we see in Texas is the percentage of movement of groups is higher than in other parts of the country. So you're seeing two partners in a council, two partners and a couple of associates, et cetera, maybe even three or four partners moving from firm to firm. And so that is much, much more common in Texas than at least in DC. I can't really speak to New York as well. Maybe Rob can help me on that. But that's something that we're seeing, and it's generally a trend, I think, nationally, but particularly so in Texas.
And speaking of New York, and Rob, why don't you give us your view on the market?
Thanks, Murray. New York, I think, has slowed a little bit. It definitely is driven by the capital markets, as Steve's mentioned in the past. New York drives and lives and dies with the capital markets and the stock market, the bond markets, et cetera. And they've tended to be frozen up a little bit this year. We also know it's been the year of efficiency coming from technology firms like Meta, et cetera. So, and the technology firms were laying off a little bit. So that, coupled with the capital markets frozen up, has resulted in the second half of the year, I noticed, has gotten a little slower, especially compared to the first half of 23. Litigation, I think, has been strong. A lot of firms are looking for litigators. It continues to be strong. I guess they say counter-cyclical. And I think I'm hoping the Fed's done with raising rates. Hopefully 24 will be a lot more looser. I'm more sanguine on 24. I think there'll be more IPOs, et cetera, maybe more private equity deals, which tends to drive business throughout the legal community.
Yeah, so let me add a little bit more on the national spotlight in terms of the numbers. The numbers that we're seeing is that the partner numbers nationally, and this is pretty much true in DC as well, down about 4% from 2022, which was the record year for lateral moves. So from that standpoint, 2023, while it may be off a little bit, it's still a strong year. And I agree with Rob that it's been particularly weaker since like June, July, been slower than it was in the early part of the year. So I think that's down. Where we see it more often, obviously associate hiring has been down, given the state of the corporate market, et cetera, but also less counsel hiring. I think the statistics are showing around 20% fewer. I think the firms have made a lot of their succession plan hiring that definitely was caused by COVID and some of the retirements that occurred during that time period. I think they've done those, and they're a little less willing to do it in a more challenging economic time.
Yeah, it's 2024 is going to be a an interesting year, and I hope an active year. I'm seeing more activity what I do, so that's good.
Right, and yeah, everything we're seeing is that the corporate market's going to pick up, so that will be probably positive for our industry.
So let's shift our focus now, and we have an august group here on this podcast who have some unique insights into what firms are doing that are successful, what firms are doing that are creating some challenges in terms of their lateral recruiting, and maybe we can get each of you to share some thoughts on what you've seen as best practices, where you've seen firms fumble, and maybe some ways that firms can improve what they're doing just in general. Because I know it's a tough thing. This lateral recruiting is a tough thing, and there's a lot of hands on it. So it's tricky. And so why don't we get started on this one with Steve? You have the broadest view of what's going on and going back 28 years. So,
right. Yeah. Well, there's definitely a lot to unpack there. But I would say the first thing that I think that firms have to recognize is portable business is not what it used to be. And firms have done a better job of institutionalizing their clients. And they do a very good job of rewarding attorneys who play a role in both client development and client service. And therefore, the idea that many lawyers can pick up and move even a great deal of their client base without any kind of difficulty, it's not very common. And so we see the same thing being repeated over and over again with somebody who is responsible at their current firm, is compensated at their current firm according to what is regarded as their originations or their managed work, but that if they were to pick up and move, they would not have nearly that kind of business. But those people are valuable, can be valuable to a new firm, particularly if you look at it from the long haul, like what's going to happen year two, year three, year four. So I just think the firms that are looking at this with a more holistic view as to what the contribution of the lawyer will be will do better than the firms that just sort of look at the number, start to just look at this as a bunch of numbers. So that would be my first point that I would make. Second point I would make is it's all in for a lot of firms. It's all in crafting the opportunity. What's the opportunity for the lateral? Not what is it, what's in it for us, but what is it that the lateral will gain if they go to our platform? What is it that they will gain that they may not be getting where they are right now? And so it's really to tell that story both about the practice group that you're hiring into and the firm as a whole. And then the third, and I'm going to leave this more to Sadia and Rob, but it's a matter of having your process in, having a smooth process, predictable, no surprises. And I would say the exception rather than
the no surprises.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I would say that's exactly.
Sadia, what do you think about that?
Murray, so, Steve, obviously on the money in terms of what we're seeing overall. I would just add to that. And by the way, what Steve describes, generally is the same picture for Texas and is going to be for New York as well. We tried to emphasize to the client that, obviously don't focus that hard on portables. More to what Steve is saying, focus on, what the candidate can bring. There's more value than just the portables. In that regard, Murray, we advise them on a comprehensive business plan process. And so in a way, we help both the candidate and the client sort of, you could say articulate why that candidate is a good piece for the firm. And it goes both ways. Why the candidate's a good fit for the firm and why the firm is a good fit for the candidate. In terms of
this is not the LPQ, right? This is not the LPQ.
No. That's a great question.
I just want to clarify that because it's a two-way street.
Yeah, Murray, that's a great question. You know, we help candidates put together a business plan so that there's sort of almost a forecast in, you know, what the first 6 months or year will look like. It helps both the firm and the candidate sort of frame, you know, what the contribution could be. And it takes the focus a little bit off the portables, a little bit more onto the overall value, places a little bit more on the overall value that the candidate brings. I think it actually helps both sides articulate their vision. In terms of process, and you know, Rob will add to this as well. Look, this is like any other working item. If you have a point person on the inside and somebody both, you know, within the internal recruiting division and the practice looking for the talent, working hand in hand with us, working regularly with us, and looking at the candidates as we bring them, you know, without any hiccups, you're just going to have a smoother process. You're going to allow us to go through the market, reach into our, you know, deep depths, whether it's market intel or, you know, what we know on the background of candidates, and we can smoothly bring you know, it's an ongoing assembly line almost of candidates. And as long as there's internal coordination and interest, and I don't want to steal the thunder from the end of our podcast, but the process will be a lot more smoother and it'll be a successful placement.
Well, great points. Rob, what are your thoughts on what you're seeing that firms are doing, ways they could improve, et cetera?
Yeah, I just want to follow up on what Steve and Sally, they said it very well. What the law firms need to do to improve it. I'd like to just delve into a little bit about that process part because I think it's so important. Steve and Sadia mentioned that they could improve the process. What does that really mean? Like Sadia was saying, somebody who owns it, the partner who owns the lateral hire, they're assigned to it. They have an interest in making it work. They're available for questions. They own the process. They're the point person. They can chat with you when questions come in. You can meet with them every 2 weeks, let's say. They're available. They make it a priority. They own the process. I would also say law firms should really give a lot of thought before they bring us in as to what specifically they're looking for. Is this a replacement partner or is it building a new book? If it's the latter, obviously it's a lot more analysis that is involved and a lot more questions are going to come in from the candidates, et cetera. So that's important. And do they have the support staff for if they're going to build a new practice? For example, the support groups like tax, is that ready to go and willing and able to support the new practice? Have you thought about that? And then finally, focus really, this dovetails and follows from the first two, try to smooth out the process so it's much shorter. Try to reduce. Mm-hmm. The process has become 3, 4, 5, 6 months now. Try to make it a little shorter.
Right. And on that point, Rob mentions having the point person. In reality, I think for most firms, you actually have to have two point persons. Yeah. One is the partner, and it's critical, and I'm going to get back to that. But it's also somebody with some real authority who is in the recruiting staff, the recruiting director or a manager, somebody who's got the ability to get answers and to move those processes along. And so you really need the combination of both. I think what we run into sometimes is we might have a really good recruiting director who's working with us, very dedicated, understands, but invariably questions will come up about the practice, about, okay, what's the client base? What are the possible conflicts? Things that are really important. And that recruiting director doesn't necessarily have the answers and needs to be able to contact that key partner and get those answers. And if you got a candidate and the candidate's asking a bunch of questions about the practice and you're going 2 weeks before you get an answer, that doesn't put your firm in a good light. So all of what Rob and Sadia has said is absolutely true. It is a bunch of different aspects that need to be in line and work progressively.
And when I've worked, and I have worked very closely, as Steve knows, with recruiting teams at different firms that I've been at, both on the associate recruiting, you know, the newbies coming in from law school, and also on the lateral, probably more on the lateral side. What I talk about is this is a the sales rules. You know, the selling is what we're doing here, and that flips the script and it makes them think a little differently. And to Sadia's point about sort of having this mutuality of understanding, that if we can move this to a using techniques that people use in sales, not necessarily, you know, pipeline management and all that kind of stuff, but sort of the posture in sales, I think that can help tremendously, and it helps contextualize it for the partners. It helps contextualize it for the recruiting folks. So I want to go back to something that we heard from Sadia that I think is interesting. And that is this idea of the business plan or business planning, getting the lateral recruits through this arduous process is, as we've heard, a challenge. The other challenge that happens then is for the lateral and the lateral to be successful at their new firm. My experience is that some are highly successful, others aren't, and I think there's some ways that firms can probably help their incoming laterals in ways that maybe they're not doing today. And I know, Steve, you've seen just years and years and all kinds of different firms and all kinds of different candidates come in with different levels of success. So what have you seen that's been on the positive side that you've seen firms do that have helped their lateral recruits as they're coming, as they're settling in at the firm?
Right. It's interesting. If you look at the historical basis with regard to a business plan, when we started that, sort of process, it was really focused on government laterals. Government laterals needed a business plan because they were starting from zero. They had to explain, what their value was and why clients would come to them, so forth. That started the process, that was 25 years ago. But I'd say in recent years, last 10 years, more and more firms are requesting, sometimes demanding, the business plan from people who are already in practice and have a multi-million dollar book. The idea being that they are realizing that they've got to prepare for success. So we see the best methodology with regard to a business plan. It starts in the recruiting process, but goes on to the integration process as well, which is starts with the candidate's business plan. Usually before the offer is made, there is an opportunity for the firm to actually annotate that business plan and throw in their ideas, some ideas that where they can see, well, we can help the lateral. This is this idea of you're continuing to sell the opportunity to the lateral. So the best practice is to have a combination plan. That combination plan can become the basis for your integration plan, because all of it's there. The candidates that you hope to come over, candidates that you can work together on, candidates that neither of you have, but because of the combined strengths of your practices, you can go out and attract. So to me, that's really important. It's a living document that can be the basis for review, every 90 days in terms of how the lateral's doing, what we need to do more, what the firm needs to do more. Because I can tell you that the lateral's failure and success is as much dependent on the firm as it is on the lateral themselves.
Yeah, and great point. And I hope for the recruiters, the internal recruiters and the heads of practices that I know listen to this podcast, please listen. My experience is absolutely squares with Steve's experience from the internal side. The more you can do to help support those laterals in the first, really in the first 6 months, maybe beyond that, but the first 6 months are critical. So we always, for those of us those of you who have been listening to the other episodes of this podcast, you will know that we try to inject a little bit of fun, a little bit of humor into our episodes. And this one is no different. And our friends at McCormick Group have prepared 10 ways to lose your candidate. And listen up, folks, because this is real. And this is born out from hard won experience. So we're going to start out with number 10. Saadia, want to handle that?
Thank you, Murray. Number 10 is refuse to share relevant financial information. To me, this is an issue of trust. If the client is asking the candidate to share financials from his or her career, when the candidate asks the client or the firm to share relevant financial information about the firm, often we'll see the client say, oh, but this is confidential. We don't feel comfortable sharing this or this piece of information. Please share that information with the candidate because it's going to be a big part of the reason why he or she decides to join your firm.
Excellent point. Number 9, Steve.
All right. So number 9 is back check the candidate. And what I mean by that is you check with somebody who might be at another law firm that worked with that candidate or even at the firm that they're leaving, which has amazingly happened. This is a violation of confidentiality, pure and simple. And it's amazing that lawyers who would know the value of confidentiality violate this more often than you would think. And so it's really important to keep that in mind, because if that gets back to the candidate, not only will he or she not come to your firm, he or she will tell everybody they know about what happened at the firm and how they can't be trusted. And then in that case, you're toast.
You are toast. Absolutely. No cinnamon. All right. Number 8, Rob.
Number 8 is require a world tour. Pre-COVID, this was literally a world tour, but now it's we're in a Zoom world. So it's a world Zoom tour. And again, this is what we were saying before it goes back to it. It's just a months long process. The recruiting process has become too long. And this is another way to lose a candidate by keep requiring them to meet one more person. Nope, I lost the hearing.
Rob, I hear you.
Okay, now I hear.
I can't hear Murray.
I think it's Murray that
Murray muted. Okay. Murray, I think you're on mute.
All right, number 7. Steve Nelson.
All right. So number 7 is stop selling during due diligence. This is occurring when you're in due diligence and you start to bring in people to really question the lateral about client relationships and their history and why they moved to a certain firm. Sometimes that sounds like the Spanish Inquisition, and that never goes well. So the idea is that this should all be part of a discussion as to, the fact that this person can be an asset to the firm, but we have to obviously do our job and make sure that, that we understand the practice and the nuances of the practice.
All right. And number 7, which is quite germane to this time of the year, Saadia.
So number 6 is ignore the candidate's year-end bonus. And this to us is an issue of timing. So remember that you, the hiring firm, is thinking, okay, I want to bring on the candidate in January. Don't forget that the candidate has their own timing. And the year-end bonus is one of the drivers for the timing of any possible switch. So you may say you want to hire in month X, and the candidate's not going anywhere until he or she has received the year-end bonus, which could be a month later, 2 months later. After they receive that bonus, they're able to take a series of steps to formally join your firm.
Point. All right. And number 5, and this is can only be answered by Rob.
Yes, something near and dear to my heart, conflicts checking. I think firms take forever to check conflicts is a definite way to lose a candidate. Really, I urge firms to use common sense here. Is the lateral corporate or litigation? Do you really have to go back 5 years? You could really, 3 years is more often than not is sufficient. So you could really use common sense, save time here, and really try to expedite the conflicts checking process.
All right. And number four, one would not think we would need to admonish people on this, but we do, Steve.
Yeah. So I know of at least two firms that are continuing, and these are big, big, well-respected firms that continue to ask lateral partner candidates for their law school transcripts. Can be borderline insulting, and particularly for those who didn't do so well in law school. The idea that you can't trust the 15 or so years they've been in private practice in terms of figuring out are they good lawyers or they're not good lawyers, and to go back to the law school transcripts and see how they did in their first year torts class, that just seems that seems ridiculous to me and to many candidates. And I've definitely had candidates when they've been asked that question, basically say, well, now I know more about this law firm and I'm not liking what I'm hearing.
Wow. Just wow. All right. Going back to some of our earlier points in the podcast about process, Rob, number three.
Yes, this is another way to lose a candidate. Fail to designate a point person. Law firms really have to, when they're doing a lateral search, dedicate a partner who can be responsive, who's available, who owns the process, and can answer questions quickly and accurately so that the recruiting process moves at a swift pace.
And on a related note, Sadia.
Number two is make sure that point person is always busy. So it's good that the firm has designated a point person. And again, we recommend a point person within the internal recruiting function and one with the practice area making the hire. But you have to make sure that point person also has a process, whether it's recurring calls, some sort of, game plan around when to see candidates, how to work with their own internal practice to keep the process moving along. So make sure there's a process around it.
And now, in great anticipation, we look for the number one way you can lose your candidate. Steve?
Right. And that's basically just to ignore the candidate and his or her recruiter. It's amazing how when we get towards the end of a process, the firm will go to radio silence with regard to a candidate. Obviously, there's some issues. Sometimes it's just a matter of the key people are going on vacation or, there's something going on that's a explainable delay. And rather than just picking up the phone and calling the recruiter or calling the candidate and saying, we're really still interested. We just run into a snag and, we'll get this resolved as soon as possible. The firm feels like it's almost like, silence is golden. Well, silence isn't golden in this situation. And will only lead to the candidate wondering, what kind of firm am I joining?
Well, to those people who are involved, the internal folks who are involved in lateral recruiting, I hope you listened closely here. And also for you partners who are in charge of lateral recruiting or recruiting for your particular department of practice, these are all hard-won lessons. Each one of these is based on real experience by each of the recruiters that are on this call of this podcast today. And with that, we end season one of Steve's Rules. Steve, it's been a great run. It's not a run that's going to end anytime soon. We're going to be keeping this going into 2024, season two. So stay tuned. We'll have lots of guest stars as they always do on season two, and we will never jump the shark. And that's really it from me, Steve. Sadia, Rob, any final thoughts, questions, ideas?
Just thank you very much, Steve and Murray, for inviting us, and happy holidays to all.
Happy holidays. Thank you very much, Murray and Steve, for having us participate today, and echo what Rob said. I hope you all enjoy the holiday season.
Yep, and happy holidays, and don't forget those bonuses.
Good bonuses for everybody. All right. Take care, folks.
Thank you. Take care, everyone. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
He did it again.
Rob, please. By the way, Murray, Rob does this internally too. He'll be gone within like a second of something ending.
All right. I think that works. I assume that you can work over the time when you lost your audio.
Yeah. We'll be able to be able to edit that out and make sure it sounds okay. And if I need to re-record a little bit, I will, but I think we'll be.
What happened, by the way? I think that we didn't.
I have a cough button on my microphone, and I was coughing, and I just before I coughed, I hit the cough button, and then I went to. So
we're not podcast stars like you, so we're like, where did he go? I don't know if you heard us.
Well, this microphone is great. I use it on all of my Zoom calls and everything, and it was like $150. Not a whole lot.
Oh, wow.
It sounds really, really good.
Well, you have the best, like, sort of laid back but engaging podcast voice.
Well, thank you.
You're so perfect for this.
It is.
And you've turned our Steve into a very perfect podcaster as well.
Steve comes in with...